Hello, it is April 14th, 2017. You are looking live at Athens, Georgia. This is episode 639 of the Will Leach Experience Podcast on Sports on Earth. I am the aforementioned Will Leach. I thank you for spending part of your day with me on this weekend. In addition to the Cardinals playing at Yankee Stadium, which is the actual biggest story that's happening this weekend, the NBA playoffs begin, and I'm very excited. This is a particularly enjoyable playoff time. I could not think of anyone better to chat with me about it than today's guest, Michael Pina, NBA writer for Sports on Earth, Bleacher Report, Vice Sports, co-host of the Big Three podcast. Michael V. Pina, you are one of my favorite NBA people. You rock. Thank you for coming on to preview the NBA playoffs with me.
Oh, that was such a kind introduction. Good to be here. Thanks, Will.
So are you, I have a few general NBA questions for you before we really get into it. It's funny because I wrote a little piece for, actually in Sports Illustrated magazine this week about in favor of rematches. And about like how there's been a sense about the NBA this year. You saw a lot of the dipshittery, angry people when Durant signed with the Warriors. The idea, like, why do we even watch the regular season anymore? We already know what the finals going to show. And guess what happened? We had an absolutely fantastic regular season full of some of these absolutely completely amazing individual performances. I'm curious, what do you think the major story of this regular season, which of course large part of it will be forgotten now that we're into the playoffs, to me is it Westbrook? Is it the MVP race? Is it kind of the Warriors figuring out what's the major story of the regular season?
Yeah, I think just the ridiculous amount of individual talent that's spread all throughout the league. You know, a lot coming into the season was focused on those two super teams in Cleveland and Golden State, and they've both been pretty good. More so Golden State has lived up to expectations. But if you just look at how, you know, Kawhi Leonard has led the Spurs to over 60 wins, I don't think anyone really expected that. Nobody expected Russell Westbrook to be this ridiculous. I think a lot of people knew his usage would spike. And, you know, he's a fantastic all around offensive player. But to average a triple double is obviously totally ludicrous. James Harden and Mike D'Antoni's system, that was also expected to be fireworks, but I think even he's exceeded expectations in his run for the MVP. And then, you know, all on down the line from guys like Isaiah Thomas and what he's done in Boston, Jimmy Butler's taken steps forward, John Wall's been healthy and fantastic. So there's just been a lot of really great, superb individual talent and showcases this season.
Yeah, it's funny. It's been funny to watch just the you've got a good MVP race when everybody's mad at each other, and you can kind of get a sense of everyone's personal biases and sensibilities just from who they kind of. But like it's funny. Like, you know, Westbrook, whether he's the most valuable player or not, he's certainly the most compelling character this year. Like, his heart is beating out of his chest every time that he plays, and to me that's just vivid. But then there's the efficiency part of me that's like, okay, no, it's Harden, or it's the James is the best player on the planet, why would they give it to him? It's him. Or it's the two-way thing of Leonard. To me, that's an example of the fact that you have four vivid cases like that. Never, you know, that's not even getting into Durant and the actual best team in the NBA. This does feel like a league that's operating kind of at peak capacity right now.
Yeah, and you know, I think with regards to the MVP race, the more certain you are about who is the winner, the less right you are, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Like, you gotta, we're splitting hairs here between the top four and then the guys like Steph Curry, who might finish fifth, or Isaiah Thomas, who might finish fifth, who, you know, any other year, those guys would win MVPs. If you compare Isaiah's numbers with Steph's numbers from 2 years ago when he won his first MVP, they're just about on that level. So it's just a totally insane season.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. And it turns out, even if the final that we all thought we were going to get is still the most likely final, it did not diminish our enjoyment of this regular season at all. Okay, so I want to go through the playoff matchups. I'm going to go in reverse order of what might be considered one's excitement level. And it's funny, of course, to me, one of my fun little parlor games, not just mine, but one of the fun parlor games of every playoff matchup season is, okay, what's the NBA TV series? That's always the first thing. What is it? What is the one that's going to be on there? And it's funny because to me, the logical pick was Wizard Hawks. Wizard Hawks looks like it's a rematch. Neither team, like the Wizards are somewhat compelling. The Hawks certainly are not. But there actually are more Raptors Bucks games on NBA TV than there are Wizards Hawks, probably just because I think the Wizards have been a pretty exciting, fun team. But when I start the least compelling series, I'll confess, I have to start with kind of Spurs Grizzlies. We'll start with that one. Spurs Grizzlies seems least compelling to me, if just because, like, there are obviously individual stuff here, but this is not, like, this is the two, like, obviously both these teams are exciting to watch, and the NBA is a really fun, exciting experience, but it doesn't feel like you're going to get, like, a lunatic game out of this series, as you might, and the Spurs seem to me to be pretty comfortable favorites.
Yeah, I'm glad I kind of had a feeling you would pick that series, and I agree. Even though these two teams, you know, they play very similar styles, and they were competitive during the regular season when they squared off. I think the Grizzlies actually had a higher point differential, which is pretty interesting, and I think they have reasons to be confident. But that being said, they do not have Kawhi Leonard, and they do not have, I think, the depth in the front court that the Spurs have deployed all season long, from Pau Gasol and Deadman and LaMarcus Aldridge, and even David Lee has given them some fantastic minutes. So, you know, the Spurs, they've won 62 games this season. They are a legitimate title contender. I think this series could go, you know, five, maybe even six. I think the Grizzlies will be competitive, just because of, you know, I think they're more built for a seven game series than an 82 game regular season, with the aging pieces that they have, guys like Tony Allen, who can really muck things up. I think he'll chase around Kawhi Leonard the entire series and make his life a little difficult. Marcus Alls had a really good season, and his ability to space the floor has been fantastic. And Mike Conley is still, you know, just one of the more overlooked brilliant players in the league. But, you know, that being said, the Spurs are going to win. They're just a better team.
Yeah, I feel like it's a good sign that if this is maybe the worst series, this looks like it's fine. I didn't even know that about the point differential. That's actually kind of an amazing little fact about it. If this is your worst series, I think you're in pretty good shape, because I think that there's definitely potential for excitement there. Okay, now we'll go to the next one. Now I will probably stick with my Wizards Hawks, not because of the Wizards, who I think are actually pretty fun, but it wasn't very long ago that the Hawks looked like they might not make the playoffs at all. They were going through that kind of terrible run before Millsap kind of pulled them out a little bit. But to me, what do we make of the Wizards? There was a time where you know, you thought, well, maybe they're competing with the Celtics a little bit for that top run. But after that horrible start, they kind of turned around, really had this terrific season. What do you make of the Wizards in a general sense, and then also in this series?
So, I mean, it all starts with the backcourt. John Wall and Bradley Beal have had fantastic seasons. Otto Porter is one of the better spot-up three-point shooters in the league. And you know, their bench has been criticized all year, even after the trade deadline, when they acquired Bogdanovich and Brandon Jennings and just more notable offensive players to kind of lift that unit up. But it's funny, like the Wizards defense since the All-Star break has been one of the worst in the entire league. They've completely fallen apart on that end. And actually their net rating is 20th since the All-Star break, and the Hawks is 19th, despite Atlanta having the worst offense since the break. So I think the series is a little more, might be a little bit more close than a lot of people think. Just because of how poorly the Wizards have played defensively. And then Jan Mahinmi might not even play in this series. And he's been, you know, he's a pretty important player off the bench there. So I think a lot of Atlanta's struggles in recent weeks has also been because Millsap has been hurt and Thabo Sefolosha has been hurt. And that's kind of let guys off their bench. They've allowed to get more minutes, more reps. So I think with everybody healthy on Atlanta, they might be a little bit better than expected, but you know, at the end of the day, I would still side with the Wizards just based on their star power.
Yeah, I realize I'm not actually have I haven't actually make I'm going to make you actually do predictions in the number of games of this series. So, but get back to the Spurs Grizzlies. Who do you have winning in what?
Spurs in six.
Spurs in six. Okay, and Hawks Wiz.
Wizards in seven.
Oh wow, I like it. I like to thank you, by the way. I listened to the Baseball Perspectives podcast, and they did this preview series. And every single time someone would you'd spend a half hour listening to somebody talk about a game, and at the end of the podcast, they would say, "Okay, how many games are they going to win?" And people just acted like you'd ask them, "So, which of your children is the favorite, or what's the most embarrassing thing you've ever done in your life?" Like, it's a prediction. It's a podcast, for crying out loud. Just make a prediction. Who cares? So thank you for not groaning over that. Next, I think we'll probably go probably Warriors Blazers. Obviously, there's a little bit of, to be compelling about this, and just seeing how the Warriors kind of get Durant back in the system. But, you know, this team, it was funny that stretch where they were struggling when Durant first went out just feels like so long ago. They, if anything, you're like, okay, let's make sure Durant doesn't screw this up, because they seem to have that rolling. It does feel, even though the Warriors have had their kind of ups and downs, have had their injuries a little bit this year, they're operating kind of at top efficiency right now. They seem to really be rolling. And the Blazers, if anything, are just kind of there to help Durant get into the mix a little bit.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, Damian Lillard has been a fireball over the past few weeks, and he's kind of helped carry them into the playoffs, along with Yusuf Nurkic, who's a little banged up. And I don't really know his status, to be honest, in this series, which kind of stinks because he's one of the more fun dudes to watch. And I think him fighting Draymond Green would be a cool subplot in the series. But yeah, the Warriors are a total juggernaut. And I'm kind of surprised, to be honest, by how well that they played when after they struggled a little bit to adjust when Durant went down and then bounced back like nothing happened. And, you know, I thought that their lack of depth would strike as an issue, just because you compare this team to the one last year, and, you know, they forfeited Harrison Barnes, who's turned out to be quite the player in Dallas, and Andrew Bogut, who was so important for them, and Mo Spates, guys like that, Barbosa. And you look at the bench now, and it's rookies, it's guys on veteran minimum contracts who aren't good, it's aging pieces like Sean Livingston and Iguodala, who has really bounced back and could win Sixth Man of the Year. So yeah, this team is firing in all cylinders. They have still two of the five best players in the world, probably. So yeah, they're totally unfair, and they'll probably sweep the series.
Fair enough. And it will be, we'll get at the end, kind of make some larger predictions out of here. But for now, on my little calendar on my wall, move over the Warriors, because Michael told me to. Okay, so next, let's go with Cavs Pacers as the next series. Obviously, the Cavs have had their issues. There always seems to be, I like the 538 piece, by the way, that was kind of about, like, what is the difference? But, like, they really have not won that many games. They don't really feel very dominant. They didn't get the number one seed. In a vacuum, we would all be like, wow, what's wrong with this team? They haven't played, their defense is struggling. They've had all these issues. But still, no one's actually really seems to think that they're not the extreme favorite in the Eastern Conference. Are the Pacers the type of team that can give them trouble, or are we just watching this series to see Lance Stephenson be an asshole?
Well, they have a star in Paul George, so that's a start. And, you know, the fact that he plays the same position as LeBron and will probably guard him for a majority of the series is nice. But, you know, other than that, I think the Cavaliers, their offense is just totally unguardable when they go small and put LeBron at the four and surround him with shooters like Kyle Korver, J.R. Smith. It's just totally unfair. There was a game a few weeks ago or a couple weeks ago in Boston, and LeBron just totally asserted his dominance. And you realize why. He's the queen of the chessboard, best player in the world, unstoppable. And I think the roster, at least offensively, is one of the best that they've has ever been assembled around him, including the years when he was with the Miami Heat. So I don't know if the Pacers can stop that offense. And, you know, on the other end, Cleveland's defense has been second worst behind only the Los Angeles Lakers have had a worse defense since the All-Star break, and they've been abysmal in their inability to get stops. And you look at the personnel, and there's just not too many guys who are good individual defenders, and you wonder how they're going to turn this around. But for the first round, I don't think it should be that too much of a concern.
Yeah, I want to touch on that a little bit more. Is there what is it? What do they need to fix? Is it possible to fix their defense? Like is that going to happen, or is the wish casting for the Cavs is just their offense is so great and LeBron will figure something out?
Yeah, I think that's the $1 million question. I don't know. I've pored over numbers over the past 24 hours for a different article I'm writing about this, and I have no idea. I talked to a few guys in the locker room after that game in Boston, and they all pointed to the March schedule and how they played, I think, 12 games on the road. They were in every time zone. And for an aging team, that's not fun. And, you know, they rested a bunch of guys. And Ty Lue likes to change game plans from night to night, depending on the opponent. And, you know, executing different game plans is difficult, even when you're a veteran team. And they've kind of had to incorporate a lot of new pieces. So I think when you have a 7-game series and you have rest in between each game and you're able to hone in on one opponent, one system, one group of players, I think they're able to play better team defense. But when you're 29th for that long of a time, it's very, very concerning. And I don't know how you bounce back from that.
All right. So next we go to, let's go Raptors Bucks at this point. To me, I'm just there. That little stretch where it looked like Giannis wasn't going to make the playoffs was very distressing. So to see them kind of make that run and let us all have that moment. It's weird though. There's still this kind of sense that like, wow, finally you get to make the big stage. I mean, this guy was voted into the All-Star game. I mean, it's not like no one's ever heard of the guy or anything. But it does have that feel that while the Raptors, who, you know, have had, you know, have hardly been a juggernaut, but I think are in the midst of kind of their run here. There's a excitement of seeing Giannis just have to, how much can he do? Can he win a game or two by himself in this series? When I look at the Eastern Conference, this feels, maybe we'll talk about the Celtics in a second, but this feels like the one most likely to sneak out an upset, not because the Raptors are bad, but just because there's such a supreme individual talent there. Am I being crazy? I'm not saying I'm picking an upset, but do you see that as at least a possibility?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Giannis is ridiculous. I don't think that the Raptors have an answer for him. I think they'll try to stick PJ Tucker on him, but Ibaka can't hang with him in the open floor, can't go out to, they don't want him going out to the perimeter to cover him, even though Giannis, you know, he's taller and longer than Ibaka, which is, it's just so scary when you put it that way. But yeah, I think he really has an opportunity to establish himself as one of the 10 best players in the world in this series. And I think he can do it. I think that when you look at the length just up and down this roster and the lineups that they deploy and how well Chris Middleton has looked since he came back from a devastating torn hamstring injury, this team is very good. They shoot the three ball. They're versatile. They can switch. And I would not be surprised if they pulled off an upset.
And that would be the honest thing, right? That would get people really like that. That would be an elevation if he could pull off an upset in this series. Particularly, you know, if he does pull off an upset in this series, then he gets the Cavs probably. That feels like almost like an ascension narrative happening.
Right, and the Bucks have kind of been like a thorn in Cleveland side during the regular season. So that series would be super, super fun. And I didn't mention Malcolm Brogdon, who I don't think he might win Rookie of the Year. So obviously he's getting attention, but I don't think people really get just how awesome he is and his impact on this team. You know, when he went down last week, and they lost two. They were blown. They were blown out by the Thunder, and they lost another game. I forget against who. And you just look at how important he is to what they do, and how he can space the floor, knock down threes, create his own offense. He's very aggressive, and he's big and strong on the defensive end. So he's very good too, and would create problems, I think, for Kyle Lowry and Kyrie Irving potentially in the next round.
So are you picking him?
No.
Ah!
I got to go Raptors in seven, just because I think that I love how well that they've played with Ibaka and PJ Tucker on the defensive end since the All-Star break. And, you know, Kyle Lowry's only played four games over the past couple months. So integrating him into the system, I'm sure they wish they had a little bit more time. But he's their most important player, and it's good to have him, you know, just out there being Kyle Lowry. So I got to pick them.
All right, now we'll go to your neck of the woods. We will do Celtics Bulls. I think, like a lot of people, I was hoping the Heat were going to sneak into that eighth spot just to kind of see it, to have them pull that off. Would have been pretty enjoyable. But the Bulls are kind of they've been this such had such drama all season, and they've had so much kind of craziness going on with them. It's almost fitting to see them kind of have this one off run against the Celtics. It's funny though. I mean, at one point we were wondering if the guy that the Celtics are going to be facing and dealing with all series, Jimmy Butler, was going to be a Celtic at some point. When you look at what has made, you've obviously watched the Celtics team very closely all year. When you let's focus more on them, when you look at the Celtics, what are they doing? How seriously should we, it still feels like a team that is a piece apart, or is this like, when you look at this team, do they seem like serious challengers to Cleveland as currently constructed?
I think that their regular season was impressive. I think they're a good, well-balanced team. I also think that they are the least intimidating top seed of my lifetime. I don't think, you know, if Miami was the eight seed, Miami would not be afraid of the Celtics at all. And I don't think it would totally shock anybody if they pulled off an upset and beat the Celtics. This team is so reliant on Isaiah Thomas. It's disturbing. When he sits, they just literally can't score. And that's kind of an unsolvable problem. I think they expected to get a little bit more out of Terry Rozier this year. He's been disappointing. Marcus Smart, he's one of my favorite players in the whole league, but his jumper has not improved, and he's one of the most inefficient players in basketball for how many minutes he plays. So, yeah, their offense is just so atrocious when Isaiah sits, and they are for sure at least one piece away from actually winning it all. And I don't think that piece, truth be told, for at least this season, was a Jimmy Butler or a Paul George, which is why they did not swing a major blockbuster trade at the deadline.
What do you think they're going to do? Like, I'm just like as an expert, you know them so well. What do you think they do? I guess a little bit depends on what happens this postseason, but certainly what they do next is a pretty fascinating thing. If you were in their position, what would you do with this roster and the picks moving forward?
Just in a vacuum, I would keep the picks. I think that they're in a position where, you know, they can be extremely competitive for the next decade, and that's so rare in the NBA, and with the talent level of the guys coming out in this year's draft and next year's draft, and even as well as Brooklyn played in March, I think Brooklyn will still be one of the worst teams in the league next year. But I think they have real questions with that can't really be answered until free agency this year. So if when they clear max cap space, you know, just a lot is hanging in the balance with what happens with the Jazz and the Clippers. And I know we'll talk about that later, but Gordon Hayward becoming a Celtic in free agency is kind of a loud secret, if that makes any sense. And the possibility of him coming in kind of really changes the whole dynamic. And in that case, you could be more aggressive with moving those picks and adding another all-star caliber wing or a big. So, you know, I like the talent already on the team. I think that just the fact that how everybody is so young, already playing key roles. Jaylen Brown, I'm very high on him. I think he can be an extremely good player on both ends for years to come. And yeah, so it's such an impossible question to answer. I do not envy Danny Ainge right now.
I mean, I don't know. He's wealthier than me, and people like him. I have a little bit of envy, but just as the main opinion of this situation. All right, so you're picking this. What are you picking the Celtics? How many games?
Celtics in five.
Five. All right, easy enough. All right, okay. Two Western Conference matchups left. The second one I would put Clippers Jazz. Though as certainly I think it's probably the most competitive series. I'm wondering if the Jazz, a team that's kind of up and coming, the team that had that has the home court advantage of the series, if they beat the Clippers here, will the Clippers finally break it up?
They should right. For sure. But I mean, a lot of it depends on. I don't think that Steve Ballmer would not offer Chris Paul what he wants or Blake Griffin what he wants. I think JJ Redick might be a different story, and I think he could get more money elsewhere. But, you know, the core of Jordan, Blake and CP, I think that's got to break up if they lose this series. And, you know, even if they fall to the Warriors in the next round, I still don't really see why you would bring it back for another year. These guys are getting older. They're going to cost a lot of money, and to be in the luxury tax when you have basically, I don't want to say 0% chance of winning the title if they bring it back, but not a very good chance. Especially if they lose in the first round. I don't think that's a wise decision. So I think that they should break it up if they can't advance past the second round.
Well, tell me about this Jazz team. Like that, obviously Gobert has been a huge defensive force for them. Are they seem like the type of team that could cause a team like the Clippers that's getting older and reliant on one or two guys to score. It seems like that's a team that could cause them a lot of trouble.
They can, but the Clippers have kind of owned the Jazz this year. Rudy Gobert has made strides. He's he's a Defensive Player of the Year candidate, could win that award. He could finish first team All-NBA, depending on how you view Anthony Davis and what position he plays. So Gobert's improvements on the offensive end have been tremendous. He's become a very efficient finisher around the basket. And Gordon Hayward continues to get better in every asset of his game. I'm a huge fan of what he does on both ends. I think he's, even though he made the All-Star team, I think he's one of the more underrated players in the league. And the Clippers just match up so well with the Jazz. And in a playoff series, when they can really lean on their starting five, which is a total juggernaut, you have DeAndre Jordan, who can stifle Rudy Gobert. You have Luke Richard Mbamute, who is one of the better perimeter defenders, who you can stick on Gordon Hayward. And then you have Chris Paul, who can make George Hill's life difficult. So I think the Clippers really match up well, and the fact that they'll play their starters heavy minutes does not bode well for the Jazz. And the Clippers also have home court advantage, which is a problem for Utah.
All right, so Clippers in what?
Clippers in five.
Oh, wow. That's a full-on blowout. All right, so then we'll wrap up with Rockets Thunder, obviously the most emotionally compelling series. What is it? It's funny. Where do you go on the idea? I was listening to the Starters podcast about this the other day, about the notion that Owen has this idea like, wow, Westbrook's doing this with this nobody supporting cast. But it's not like, you know, it's not like Harden is surrounded with superstars, you know, and I, not to say that there aren't good players there, but forgetting when you put aside the MVP aspect, can you make the argument that the Rockets being in this position where they're the three seed is just as impressive for what Harden has done than what Westbrook has done getting the Thunder to a six seed?
Oh, for sure. I think that's why Harden is my pick for MVP if I had a vote. I think that there is something to be said about the talent level of these guys heading into the year. I think a lot of people were down on Ryan Anderson and that contract and Eric Gordon. But the thing is, when you compare him with Westbrook, I think that the reason why the perception is that Westbrook is carrying the group that he has is Harden is playing in a system that just totally suits his skill set with players who complement him perfectly. So Ryan Anderson is one of the best stretch fours in the league. And, you know, pick and pops with Harden and Anderson are basically impossible to stop on a night-to-night basis. And Harden has long needed someone like Eric Gordon, who could come off the bench and sustain reserve units when he's resting. And, you know, you can make an argument that Westbrook has that similar piece in Victor Oladipo, but they don't use him quite in that way. So it's a tricky discussion, but on a pure talent level, I would probably honestly take Westbrook's supporting cast, even though they don't fit his skill set as well as Harden's, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. So does that mean you are very pro Rockets in this series?
I am very pro Rockets. I'm a big fan of this team, and I think their defense is very underrated. When you look at I mentioned Gordon and Anderson, and they have Lou Williams who plays minutes, and all three of those guys have kind of been maligned, not to mention Harden for their work on the defensive end. But they have, you know, Patrick Beverley will be an all-defensive player this year. Having someone like him just hound the crap out of Westbrook for an entire series is worth something. Trevor Ariza is one of the more versatile players in the entire league. Clint Capella is a fine rim protector who could switch out in the perimeter. So they have players, they have athleticism, they have length. So I like their defense. And then on offense, they're the most prolific three-point shooting team in NBA history. And I don't think that the Thunder can keep up with that firepower.
What's Westbrook going to be like next year? like it's fascinating, right? Like he can't just do, like he'll die if he does next year what he did this year. Like I'm curious, do you think once he's like, okay, I averaged a freaking triple-double for a season, do you think he'll change his game at all? I mean, and like try to go more in the Harden direction? Like I find it fascinating to see once this fury is settled, what kind of player he becomes.
Yeah, I really hope that with age, he kind of slows down a little bit. And I mean, he'll need to just because he won't be this athletic forever, obviously. And as a point guard who's able to read the floor more so than just, you know, being a hammer and only seeing nails, which is kind of how he plays.
Right.
I look at him and I look at the pieces around him, guys like Oladipo and Steven Adams, and their inability to grow and develop and evolve this season is partly why I would take a couple guys probably over Westbrook for MVP. Is as amazing as he's been, he hasn't really made those guys better or made life that much easier for them. His usage is a few points, a few ticks higher than anything we've ever seen before. And if you look at the Thunder's net rating, they have a minus pointer differential for the season. And even when Westbrook is on the floor, they do not have a top 10 offense. So as wonderful as he's been, you can't win with one guy doing this. It's not possible. So he needs to take a tiny step back and let these other guys grow a little bit, I think.
If it were possible, he would do it, but it's not. If that makes sense. Okay, so how many games do you have the Rockets winning this one in?
Let's say six.
Six, all right, that's good. That's good. Give Westbrook a couple moments. That sounds good to me. All right, that sets up, we don't have to do like big deep dive matchups on each of these because they're theoretical matchups, but this would set up some pretty fantastic conference semifinals, to say the least. Starting in the East, Cavs, Raptors. You've talked. Who do you think that you've talked about how you're not necessarily sold on the Celtics being the biggest challenger to the Cavaliers in the East? Can the Raptors challenge them?
I think the Raptors are the biggest challenge. I don't think they'll win. It's tough because I'm of the mind that I'm not picking against LeBron until he loses. I just won't. I can't jump out ahead of it of him falling, and so I won't pick. I'm not picking anyone else to beat the Cavs this year, but. I think that series could be a lot more competitive for sure than Cavs-Raptors was in the Eastern Conference Finals last season when, it went six games, but the Cavs weren't really trying and they could clearly go to a different level when they had to. I think that the Cavaliers trying as hard as they can will just barely eke out victory in the series.
Yeah, so it is funny. That's kind of the LeBron quandary, isn't it? He's still operating at peak capacity, but as everyone else, they have so many defensive problems and all these other issues, none of which are the fault of him. But it will still feel like he. Well, I just can't see LeBron falling. Yeah, but I mean, like it will be seen as LeBron falling short when, of course, he's the only reason they're anywhere even close to this. And then, who do you think would win a theoretical Celtics Wizards series?
I like the Celtics in that series. I'm not sure why. I might be just a biased idiot because I've watched every minute of their season, and I think that there's more to. I think we'll see a little bit more out of Avery Bradley and Al Horford and Jay Crowder in a playoff series when I just feel like these guys are a little disinterested at times during the season, and I think they play up to their competition. So I would pick them in a. I could see it literally going seven games and down to the final possession, that type of series. But I would just barely pick the Celtics.
All right, so that then we go over to the West. Warriors, Clippers. You are more up on the Clippers easily getting out of that first round than I am, but that doesn't look like the type of team that can, even if everything goes perfect, can mess with what the Warriors were doing, particularly with Durant more kind of comfortable in that and healthy and back in the flow.
Yeah, so the Clippers this year, this is the best offense that they've had since Chris Paul joined the team, which I don't think a lot of people realize. That being said, they've allowed 515 points in four games against the Warriors this year, and they lost all of them. So yeah, it's I think the Clippers will be a little bit more competitive than that in a seven-game series, but it's just impossible when you look at the Warriors and the options that they have and the lineups that they can throw at you. And the fact that, they can score like 12 points in 2 minutes during any spurt in any game, and there's really nothing you can do about it. And so no, I'm picking the Warriors in that series.
Yeah, this seems very logical. And then Spurs Rockets. I'm curious, this the stylistically they might not be entirely similar, but certainly these are both very efficient teams coming together. This looks like it would be a sneaky, very entertaining matchup.
Yeah, I actually, for some reason, have not given this series a lot of thought. And you just touched on how the stylistic differences. And I think the Spurs would have to switch what they do to accommodate the Rockets more so than the Rockets changing things up. And what I mean by that is so the Spurs utilize jumbo lineups almost exclusively with Kawhi Leonard at the three, and then they play two traditional bigs. I think against the Rockets and just the way they play, you can't do that. Even though you'll have an advantage on the glass and in different areas, you can't do that. So I think that they will play Kawhi at the four quite a bit in that series if they struggle early on. And from that point, all bets would be off because the Spurs with Kawhi at the four is something that, I mean, that's probably my favorite scenario in basketball, even though Greg Popovich tortures me and never plays it. That's one series I just could not, I can't pick. I mean, I will pick for you, Will.
Thank you.
I think my pick would probably be Spurs in seven because they have home court, but that's another nail biter of a series.
That would be very fun. I think that series would be very compelling, to say the least. Okay, so that leads us to some familiar matchups, but I think would be very fun. Starting in the West, Golden State, San Antonio. Talk about the stylistic differences again. I'm curious, who matches up better with the Warriors, the Spurs or the Cavs?
I would probably say the Cavs, just because their offense is more explosive. You need I'm of the belief that there is no defense to stop these Warriors. I think you need to just score with them, to be honest. So I look at Cleveland's offense and it's been firing on all cylinders all year. I think that they create situations that are not guardable, which is similar to what the Warriors do. I think those games would be a lot more high scoring than the past couple finals when those two have faced off, and Cleveland's strategy has been really to slow things down. So I would say that Cleveland matches up a little bit better. I think the Spurs would try to, you know, their defense in the regular season has been stout the last few years. But as good as they are and as convenient as their personnel is with guys like Danny Green and Kawhi Leonard and Deadman this year, who's an upgrade over Tim Duncan in terms of his athleticism, you still need to score, like, a lot. And I don't think the Spurs can.
And assuming as down as you are on the team that you've watched every minute of this season with the Celtics against the Cavs, do you think in that theoretical matchup, where it seems like, you know, this is a matchup a lot of people could be anticipating, do you think that the Cavs, obviously they clearly did not care about getting home court, not playing one that final game. Do you think is that the main thing the Celtics have going in their favor is home court? Do you think the Cavs will possibly regret not pushing harder for that?
No, it won't matter at all. I think Cleveland just has it's just a bad matchup for the Celtics, even though they have some really nice perimeter defenders, some of the best in the league on their team. It just seems like no one can guard. Like, if I was guarding the Cavaliers in the playoffs, my strategy would be to put my best wing defender on LeBron and stick to the three-point line and not move and not help and let him do everything and hope that he wears down. And I think that would be the Celtics strategy in the finals, in the conference finals, you know, after LeBron had already been through two tough series. That being said, I wouldn't surprise me if LeBron averaged 40 in the Eastern Conference Finals and just eviscerated the Celtics. And then that doesn't even account for Kyrie Irving, who's, I feel like he kind of coasts a little bit through the regular season and saves his best for these big moments. I would still take the Cavaliers over the Celtics. I think that they're as good as Jay Crowder is and as strong as he is, LeBron just, he's a bulldozer.
I'll just tell him over. Yeah. All right. So then our theoretical, this brings us full circle on this podcast and brings us back to discussing the rematch, the third straight matchup between the Warriors and the Cavs in the playoffs, in the finals. You talked earlier about you couldn't vote against LeBron. I assume that's just for the Eastern Conference. Here's my better question. Would LeBron pulling this off, beating this Warriors team with Durant, we spent so much time when talking to the finals last year when LeBron was coming back, this would be the signature achievement. This would be the thing of his career. I would have to think if he beat this Warriors team with Durant, this would be the signature moment in LeBron's career.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. If the Cavs were to beat this Warriors team and the Warriors were healthy, it would be, I don't think any player ever would have had a more individual something to be prouder of on their resume than LeBron. But that probably is not going to happen. The Warriors are, I mean, they got Durant. Well, you get Durant because you can get Durant. That's why you get him. But, but they got him because, you know, Steph Curry is a little more fragile. He's a little more fragile than the typical superstars we saw last year. And when he's not firing as ridiculous as he was in the playoffs after he hurt his knee, they struggled a little bit. So you get Durant, someone who can get to the free throw line in a big spot, someone who, you know, is above average 3-point shooter, who can create for himself and others in a pinch. So, and he's, you know, probably one of the top 2-3 offensive players in the world. So, yeah, I don't know how the Cavs beat this team, to be honest. I mean, they have the Warriors have the best defense in the league and probably the best offense. So, yeah,
that makes it
they
hard.
Yeah, they make analysis a little bit boring, which I don't like, but you got to pick them.
All right. Well, Michael, I'm excited for you. I'm excited. I'm really, as someone you've watched the Boston, I find Boston one of the more intriguing teams just with everything they have going on. And so you've bummed me out a little bit. You're so down. I didn't think they were going to beat the Cavs. And you have them in the conference finals against the Cavs, I guess. But I don't know. I find myself wanting to watch them. Your stuff is great for us and for Vice Sports and for Bleacher Report and everything that you do. Thank you for taking the time to do this with me. And, man, enjoy the playoffs.
Thank you so much, Will.
It's going to be fun. I'm very excited. So thank you. So thank you to Michael. Follow him on Twitter, as we mentioned before. We'll be back next week to do regular shows. So we'll have Allison back on. We haven't had her on in a couple of weeks with all this other stuff happening. All this darn NBA final stuff happening. All the playoffs is very exciting times. Michael is great. Follow him. Enjoy the playoffs. Enjoy everything in the weekend. Have a great weekend, everyone. We'll talk to you next week.